Yeah, I think that pretty much sums up my presentation. So we can start the questions and discussion and that sort of thing. I've actually got a couple questions that we could think about, but any questions are obviously good game. They just ask us to present a few for discussion in case none have arisen yet. A few questions I came up with, though, were one is this a clear and accurate model of revolutionary development? You know, is this something that makes sense and is clear to explain to people and that sort of thing? And then does this model offer any sort of new or improved insights? And does it contribute to the formulation of liberatory and effective praxis? Whether or not this is clear or not, will it actually, if people start looking at things this way, will it be effective and will it improve the quality of revolutionary struggles? So if people have any questions about that or anything else, we can start the discussion.
I like what you've done. I think I approach things, as I've said a couple times, as a psychologist often. And one of the basic principles is that cognitive, emotional, moral development is always an interaction between the organism and the environment, indeed all biology. And if you think of social political institutions as forms of adaptation, the organism always acts on the environment. The environment always acts on the organism. And so it makes sense to try to situate individuals at the personal level in a social context, but also understand how individuals can change the social context and how the social context can change individuals. I think it's just so obvious that I think that's why many of us think that the conflict between lifestyle anarchists and social anarchists was a little absurd. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you obviously have to do both. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to concentrate on one exclusive of the other. So.
I can think of, like, two periods came to mind when you were talking about this, and one was the Spanish Revolution, where I feel like there were all levels were coming into play and active at the same time, and that's worthy of some analysis to, you know, of a, and I'm not a Spanish anarchist scholar, so I don't really know, you know, I just my readings, but it sort of kind of reverberates in seeing this. And the other is really my roots of political awareness was the New Society counterculture, or whatever name you want to give to the post-New Left, Back to the Land, which is really the roots of social anarchism, or the roots of the anarchism we, I think, now know as that, and where we were seeking to take those politics and make them political. And that was the, you know, the personal is political. And so all the, you know, the self-awareness issues came into play, but not in a vacuum of or in absence of the larger frame picture. Mm-hmm. And so in a sense, this is, as you're reviewing this, I'm saying, well, what's so new about, what's so different about this? It really is that. Mm-hmm. It's 1979 or 78 or 75. So that would seem to be really useful in some way. Maybe that strain has been lost, or the cohesiveness of that view has been lost in since you're rebuilding that.
Yeah, the Spanish Civil War would be an excellent example to use to illustrate this. I mean, there were all sorts of stuff going. I mean, vegetarianism, Esperanto, nudism, it was everything imaginable on sort of a lifestyle level was going on at the same time that they had incredible social structures and a real strong political movement. The three sectors supported each other.
Also, what's interesting there is the destabilization that was taking place and how the country dealt with it. I mean, obviously, part of the country dealt with it by rising up and revolting. Mm-hmm. But because as all of these come at once, the kind of upheaval at each level is an upheaval. And that leads to a social insanity for some people who are going to then grope for tradition. See, the forces that came and obliterated the revolution were, in a sense, reactions to too much change too fast. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting question, how to deal with. If all of these are simultaneous, if change happens concurrently on these levels, then the reaction is liable to be magnified. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true, I guess, because it's an interesting dichotomy or two roads that it may go down, you know, depending on the exact circumstances. Because I think if you do the change gradually enough and in a way that's inclusive enough, then the fact that it's integrated and all happening at once might be more likely for it to succeed. But then if you're doing it too quickly or if you're clearly excluding certain groups that have some degree of power or numbers, then the opposite may happen. And there's, like you said, this reactionary sense of, oh no, it's all changing too quickly, we've got to stop this. So yeah, that's a good question of how to deal with that exactly. Oh, I think you're also right too about that this isn't necessarily a new or entirely new way of looking at things. I tend to think that it's not, that it's the exact method of framing it may be new or unusual, but I think that it did exist and has existed and to some varying degrees does still exist at the moment. But I think there, at some point, part of the problem is that the anarchist movement in general has been kept, you know, at a very put down and in various places in various ways, disintegrated and disrupted. But another problem is that internally, I know there's at least a period where new people went into the anarchist movement as purely lifestyle anarchists, and then was a camp of social anarchists who, rather than dealing with that in a more welcoming and productive way, instead stepped back from it and took a polemical position of extreme opposition. You know, they distorted their own perspective in order to try to overcorrect for the other one. But then what that leaves you with is two imbalanced positions. And my preferred method of doing argumentation and philosophy is almost to do the opposite, to reach toward the opponent's perspective in order to try to find common ground while still not letting go of your own core beliefs.
I think this is really useful. Like, it's been said, like, ideas like this have been talked about in the 1800s and in the 50s and 60s. And when you were talking about this, like, you know, the personal is political came to my mind all the time, which, you know, was one of the most powerful statements. I think it started to be said, like, in the early 60s or late 50s in feminism, in that resurgence of the feminist movement. But I think it's really useful to talk about this and that we can't talk about it enough. And that although there are people who are very conscious of this within the anarchist movement, I think there's still a lot of people who think that anarchism has to be about class and state is bad, capitalism is bad, and that everything else is accessories to that, instead of a more holistic picture where, like, class and state oppression, repression is are very important aspects, but it's not everything. And then there is room for the personal. And I had one other comment, is like, it's about reclaiming the political. So, like, the little political circle you drew in the middle there, what the outside society thinks of as political or mainstream society, is, you know, like a circus. It's like a facade in a Hollywood set, you know, the workings of our democracy, so-called.
Yeah, it's like, this is sort of the way I look at us existing now, is that you've got the political sphere, which is a ruling elite, then you've got the social sphere. You know, like the multinational corporations and all of the economic infrastructure that controls how we socialize with each other. You know, like the entire architecture of entire towns is based on what these multinationals and what these government institutions want. So, and these sort of play off of each other right now, especially because you have the large corporations influencing politics and the politics influencing the large corporations. But then, you know, here we are in our personal lives, you know, and the majority of us exist entirely in this sphere. You know, it's like we're basically the passive recipients of all of these policies and such that are thrust upon us. So, like, maybe we have some small degree of influence on these two, but mostly it's a top-down model where, you know, it is a farce, it's just a little circus going on here to keep us happy and entertained and feeling like we have this model going on. When really, I would say, you know, in the U.S. at least, that political life is largely non-existent. You know, you go and vote for a president or a state representative every 2 or 4 years, and that is your political life, and that's not much of a political life at all. You know, you don't get to make decisions on policies, which, you know, policies and politics come from the same root. So it's very disturbing how we live now.
I'm trying to say that how you've drawn the political within, with a small circle within the social and personal, I think I envision our project is to make the political include everything. Because while politics, while what is political is seen as this very small realm, then the system is stable, and it's stable. It's not a situation where a revolution is going to occur at all. So their project is to depoliticize everything. Like, the whole ideology of the free market is to make it seem like it's a natural thing and that it can't be changed. It's not political. It's a law of the universe kind of thing. And it's, like, it's also a tendency in, like, the patriarchal system. It's not, like, a conspiracy or anything, but it's, like, this is just the way it is. This is how men and women are. It can't be changed. It's not political, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe one way of drawing that, another way of drawing what you've done is not one circle on top of another circle, but with overlapping spheres, so that there are some spheres where personal, social, and political all overlap, some which is strictly political, some it's strictly personal, some it's strictly social, some it's social and political, some it's...
Well, I think that if I were really trying to be more accurate in how I perceive things, that I'd probably draw something like this, a three-dimensional a three-dimensional sphere. It's been a while since I've drawn spheres. But basically, you know, you've got your personal dimension, your social dimension, your political dimension. And they're all intimately interconnected. You know, they're all necessary in order to have a public sphere at all. But then it's still intelligible to say, well, this, like you could say, an issue, for example, like an issue of, economics, you could say it's highly personal because in the sense that you're going to starve or not starve depending on this decision. So it's very personal to you. But then the social, it's also very... Well, this is a bad example, actually. But I think you see what I mean about how the three are distinct, but all forming the same whole.
Interacting.
Yeah. I think that's where a lot of the worry arose in this model, is that people didn't appreciate the possibility for unity of diversity, or unity while still having distinction. Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they would hear me talking about how, you know, you need personal lifestyle changes and health as an individual to be a revolutionary. They would think that I'm erasing these boundaries and making it all just one big, non-distinct mess. But really, I'm just drawing these arrows and saying, you know, the personal is political, and the, you know, the social is political, and the political is personal. As for your point, the only reason why I draw it with the political being a small sphere within the personal is that in order to try to clarify that although all matters decided on in life are political, that only certain ones should be decided on by the entire society or the entire community. So it's trying to convey that, you know, yes, all personal decisions or actions are political, but that doesn't mean that the society as a whole has a right to decide on them for me. It's trying to make a distinction between those two. Any further questions? Well, I guess we finished early, then.
Well, thanks a lot. So yeah. I'm looking forward to reading what you put out.
Do you have a name of your book yet?
Yeah, it's got a name and a subtitle. It's the name is rather unoriginal. It's Revolution. But then the subtitle is what did I change it to? Heal Yourself, Organize Your Community, Liberate Your Society. And, you know, with that subtitle, I intended to put the three spheres out in the open there. And it's actually, the handout has my website, treesong.org, and there's a complete outline of the book on there. I've still got another maybe 100 pages to go, but I have the entire structure, you know, of the ideas, that sort of thing mapped out.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.